This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 237.
No, I'm good, thanks, Bruce. Man, that MBN's coming in so fast now. Crackingly fast internet, dude. Even before you finished saying it, I've heard it and said hello.
That's awesome.
Sorry, where were you?
Look, they've heard it all a million times before. Well, they've heard it 236 times before anyway, so I guess
that's
they
the important bit, 236.
Well, it's 237 today. So.
Is it? Okay.
How have you been?
You know, marvellous.
Excellent.
I had a big weekend at the old digital show down in Melbourne and
had
a lot of fun. Met some lovely people, met some not quite so lovely people, but you get that. you know what it's like. I had a great time. So I've been a busy chappy the last 4 days, and now my kid's on school holidays, so there's no rest.
Oh, so you guys broke up a little bit earlier than us.
Well, my daughter's school is an independent school. They actually get a week more than everyone else does.
Yeah, but Max is in a private school as well, and here in New South Wales they break up this Friday, so. Maybe you're a week ahead of us. You probably go back to school a week before us.
She has three, who knows? She has three, who knows? So I'm fortunate I'm off to the US halfway through the last week, so I can go recover. Go recuperate by running a stupidly large amount of workshops in a very silly short period of time.
It'd be
What's easier than raising a six-year-old?
It'd be like herding 20 kids instead of two.
No, it's a six-year-old.
So how was the digital show?
You know, it was okay. Yeah, it's getting smaller by the year, as is our industry, I guess.
Right.
And I've got to say that the trade day, and if you can see me, you know, obviously you can't because this is like radio, but if you can see me, I'm doing the parentheses with my fingers.
Right.
The trade day on the Friday was extremely muted and very quiet and lifeless.
Right.
But here's the thing. The industry is so poor these days, they couldn't even afford to have ticket people on the doors to check your ticket when you came in the door.
Oh, are you serious?
This is for all 3 days. Anyone could just wander in at any old time.
Oh, you're kidding, without even being registered?
Yep. Well, they just wander in the door because there's no one there to stop them because they couldn't afford anyone on the door.
Wow.
So, of course, that means they couldn't afford anyone on the door when people were carrying stuff out.
Yeah.
I mean, I walked in and out with bag loads of stuff, you know, gear, and not a single person looked at me, you know.
Wow.
But I'm talking, I'm carrying thousands upon thousands of dollars of camera gear, so I'm shooting on stands there.
Yeah.
And no one even batted an eyelid.
Wow.
Yeah. There's no tickets required for stuff coming in, tickets required for stuff going out. And a lot of the stands were selling, so there was gear leaving.
What?
Yeah, even Mr. Cannon, in his wisdom, decided he was going to sell on the stand.
No.
Yeah, much to the great dismay of a lot of people.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a no-no at trade shows.
Well, it used to be, but these days, because the things cost so much, and yeah, I guess everyone's trying to find any way of getting some, recouping some of the money back from it, so they've just pretty much made it a free-for-all.
Wow.
So there was people selling stuff left, right, and centre.
I know that, you know, most of the, you know, certainly the hardware supplier type businesses are generally quite like the idea of being able to sell from a trade show because it means they don't have to carry as much crap back as they had to bring to the trade show in the first place.
And I guess that word trade show is probably something we should be wary of because it's probably not really to the trade anymore. It's really a public show.
Yeah.
Realistically.
Yeah.
So it's not really so much a trade show anymore. And they rely on, you know, getting enough people, enough punters through the door prepared to, you know, spend a few hard-earned dollars and see how they go. But, we go for those shows. We always go for the small stands, not the big stuff. Or I always have. The small stands are always where the cool stuff is at. There's very few of them this year. It's getting less and less even on the small stands now, which is...
Right.
So it was a bit... I said on the Friday, which all I was doing on the Friday, I was doing a couple of shoots, and that was it on the Friday. So I felt a bit, a bit down, a bit flat, you know, for my normal self. But Saturday and Sunday had a lot more buzz. Well, Saturday especially had a lot more buzz to it, so that was pretty good. Sunday was pretty quiet again. I mean, you could walk easily around the whole place. Yeah, yeah, it wasn't trying to, you know, fight your way through the crowds or through the corridors of power. And there was, yeah, people doing talks on stands, and there was empty chairs to stand at. You know,
yeah, right.
It's just that, which yeah, that just never happened in the past. So
yeah,
it was a sad little show in a lot of ways.
Yeah, right. Did you see any cool new product that we, you know, that hadn't crossed our radar before the show?
Did I pimp myself out to as many people as possible to see what free stuff I could get? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that too.
But of course I did. That's what I do.
Of course.
A few things. I came across a thing called a Boom Bandit.
Right.
Boom Bandit, B-A-N-D-I-T. Yeah. I've got a YouTube video we're going to put into the notes.
Okay.
And it's basically a boom arm, like a movie boom arm.
Yeah.
But for iPhones and compact cameras or, you know, compact system cameras. So you can get those kind of cool above shots and weird angle shots and panning and following and all sorts of stuff. All with this little, it's almost like a monopod with a weird extension arm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's got its own special little way of working it. And so there's a YouTube video in there, and that looks pretty cool. It's getting a lot of raving reviews from people who like, yeah, shooting stuff with, especially video, with odd angles. And, you know, let's say you're doing a skateboarder and you want to shoot them, yeah, do it on a ramp, but you want to shoot them from above.
Yep.
Yeah, this little boom arm will do that, no problem, and all sort of stuff. So.
Right.
So I got one of those. Yeah. Can't figure out how to use it. I haven't watched the video. I'll put a camera on it. I just haven't used it.
Right.
So that's kind of cool. That's invented by a Melbourne guy again. So Melbourne's kind of becoming the hub of photographic innovation. Yeah. We've got the Light Cube. Now we've got the Boom Bandit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's, well, who knows? Yeah, Melbourne could become the next Japan.
Yeah. You hold on to that dream, matey.
No, it could be. We've got some fine restaurants already.
Right. Actually, no, I will give you that. There are great restaurants in Melbourne. Absolutely.
There are, yeah. And absolutely. But the other week, you know, we said that, yeah, that when Richard Clarke asked the question about the transference from film to digital, and I said we're just at the cusp of the beginning.
Yep.
I mean, this sort of stuff's all starting to change, isn't it? All the way we shoot,
definitely.
It's all starting to change. It's exciting times. And I guess this was kind of sad about the industry. You know, if you go to this show like this and it all seems to be doom and gloom and everything's getting smaller and smaller, and I hear Fuji aren't going to be at the show next year, and that's, you know, one of the three biggest stands.
Wow.
Yeah, I hear they're losing 80% of their printing staff in November.
Wow.
So, Fuji becoming the new Kodak. So I kind of I've been known to have what's called foot in mouth disease.
Yeah,
as you know, and I was doing on the conference side of the show. I was doing a panel. I was moderating a panel.
Yeah.
And on the panel was, yeah, the head of Canon, the head of Nikon Australia, the head of Olympus Australia, the head of Fuji Australia, all this sort of stuff. And someone was mentioning something about, oh, you know, trying to get this new marketing campaign up to promote printing and photography in Australia, blah, blah, blah. And I said, who the hell's going to fund that? And someone said, well, Kodak used to. I said, yeah, look what happened to them, you know. So there's a few groans and, oh, I can't believe he said that. Only because there in the front row was this gentleman with white hair who's just been flown over from England to be the new head of Kodak Australia.
Oh, no.
Who's been – so there's some equity company in England's bought Kodak printing side, and this company shipped him to Australia. This is his first event. He's been in the country like 2 days.
Oh, no.
And he gets shoved on in front of me. And yeah, foot-in-mouth disease as per usual. So I didn't know that at the time, of course.
Yeah.
But you'll be proud of me, though. I did manage, whilst I had this captive audience of, you know, hundreds of people in the audience and these guys on stage, I asked them all about their 30 seconds to infinity. Why not? I had the microphone.
And what did they say?
Oh, there was a bit of humming. Well, the first questions I asked them, it was not supposed to be about, you know, my own personal vendettas, but I thought I'd make them my way. Yeah.
That's it.
I had the microphone. And try and shut me up anyway. So I said, which of you guys, how many of you guys have taken photos recently for fun?
Yeah.
Put your hands up. and not one of them could.
Oh, that's a sad indictment on the industry in itself.
Isn't it? Yeah, the head of Canon, head of Nikon, head of Olympus, head of Fuji, none of them have taken photos in the recent past for the sheer enjoyment of taking photos.
Wow.
Not one of them. But then I turned to the audience, had a go at them for the same reason.
Yeah.
Because in our industry, there's one guy who's known who always is the only guy who ever carries a camera around anywhere.
Right.
And he's the head of a company called Maxwell International Australia.
John Swainston.
John Swainston. And he's always got a camera around his neck.
Yeah.
And so I said, shame on you, audience, for being, you know, for being in this industry and not caring enough to ever bother taking a decent camera and take a decent photo.
Yeah.
So I made it kind of personal. You know? I was there for a good time, not a long time, as they say. But yeah, so I had a bit of a dig at, you know, because all these people are the first to complain about the industry, you know?
Right.
They're the first to complain about people aren't buying cameras, people aren't printing, all this sort of stuff, but they don't do it themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never go out and take photos. Name me a single, with the exception of Peter Michael, who owns Michael's Camera Store in Australia, I almost never see anyone who owns a camera store in Australia ever taking photos.
Yeah, right.
Ever. Yeah, and yeah. That is, yeah, they are business people, a lot of these guys.
Not photographers.
We wonder sometimes why we owe them our loyalty, you know, or it is just another business. But, yeah, there are some people out there that are worth supporting, I reckon, so.
Is it a case, though, you know, just playing devil's advocate, is it a case that when you throw yourself into running a camera store, particularly in such a competitive market, that you just find all of your time soaked up in keeping that business running, that it soaks up whatever spare time you might have had in the past for actually going out and just shooting for the fun of it?
Yeah, but I don't know. You had a barbecue with friends in summer.
Yeah.
They don't take photos of that.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure they've got kids or grandkids or people in their life they actually like. They don't take photos of that. You know what I mean? But it's just, you just don't see it. I said, I used to love walking around. I'd come around a laneway somewhere near Melbourne, and there'd be the owner of Michael's on his lunch break taking photos down a similar alleyway. You know, that was great to see. Yeah, and it's inspiring to see that someone who's been around his entire life is still out there as often as he can taking photos.
Yeah,
now that's the biggest and busiest camera store in Australia, and he can find time on his lunchtime to go out and enjoy himself.
And the important thing about that is that if you're not, you know, if you're the guy running the store and you don't ever get out and take a photo, then how do you know what the consumer is feeling about the product that's in the market?
And that's exactly my point to these guys on stage was, you know, how can you make decisions based on what the industry needs when you don't know what the end users actually even do?
Yeah.
Half the time, what they feel, what they think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I came up with a new slogan over the course of the weekend to Canon, to Nikon, to all these people, to all the camera stores, that I spend more time with their customers than they do.
Yeah.
As a workshop, running a workshop. And their type of customer, not their exact individual customer, obviously.
Yeah.
But so I'm in a position where I do hear their complaints. You hear their praises. You hear their frustrations. You hear their excitement. You know, when do they ever do that?
Yeah.
And that is a sad indictment. You know, that should be something that they should be actively trying to find out. You know, what do people actually want?
You know, these guys are CEOs. You'd reckon that they could just say to their PA, schedule out me, you know, one day every fortnight where I'm just not coming into the office. I'm going to be quote unquote working from home, but I'm actually going out shooting.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they?
Do any of them even have an interest in photography?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they don't.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, that's even sadder. You know, it's just the way it is. Yeah. This industry is so, you know, hooked up in the selling, the marketing, not the actual, necessarily the using.
It's all about the bottom line.
Yeah. And it's kind of sad, you know, that especially as this market shrinks, I think that attitude of it's just not going to wash any longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to want to be enthusiastic about shooting and being involved in shooting. And that's the thing, when John Swainston, who said owns Maxwell, they used to be the importers of Nikon.
Yeah.
Well, the Nikon events had heart because there was a man who was passionate about photography, you know, driving it.
Yeah.
And driving the company and driving it now, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
they employ people to come in on their Nikon warriors or whatever they call themselves to come in on the day and run an event. And I'm sure they're passionate, but is the company doing it for what reasoning? You know, is it just cold-hearted, well, this is what we need to do, or is it because there's a genuine passion? And I think that's the problem. I think the passion's sort of gone from the actual companies that make this stuff.
Yeah.
But that could be just being me. Yeah. So anyway, so
interesting
rant. I had a play with the new Olympus OMD EM1.
Oh, you did. And what were your thoughts?
About that. Well, I had a go of them about that as well.
Well, this is the one with the slightly improved intervalometer, right?
Well, it's vastly improved. But either way, what do you call an OMD EM1, for goodness? I mean, can you make it any more complex? Really? Really?
Every time I hear OMD, I think Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Exactly. Yeah. But I got to say, I like the feel of the camera. It's got a lot more. It's a lot bigger than the EM5. They're sort of a little, that little OM1 sort of knockoff lookalike.
Right.
So it's a bigger. So someone like myself with big hands, it's got a bit more of a heft to it. It feels a hell of a lot sturdier built. You can certainly feel like it is weatherproof, and I think the dials seem to be in more logical places too. Yeah, right. It sort of feels, you know, with the other Olympuses, I'm always finding I'm struggling to remember which dial does what because you don't use them enough.
Right.
Yeah, where this one just seemed a little bit more intuitive when you just pick it up. So I think it's going to go gangbusters. I think it's going to be a great little camera. And I had to play with the new 12 to 42.8 lens as well, which of course equates to 24 to 82.8.
Yep.
And that was a sweet piece of kit as well. So,
yeah, right.
So I think they're going to do exceptionally well with that as well.
Excellent. Really
good. I came across a thing called a Cam Ranger, right. Which is it's a Wi-Fi adapter for Canon and Nikon. So you know you can be able to we'll talk about the Wi-Fi cards being able to operate. Well, this thing can basically just plug into Canon and Nikon. You can actually use your iPhone to control it, your camera. You can set up ad hoc Wi-Fi networks and transfer your images straight across. All the stuff you can kind of do with a Wi-Fi card, but of course it's an external dongle.
So, right. So you use a regular memory card.
Yeah.
But this thing connects to what, like a PC sync port or something?
One of the ports on the camera. Yeah,
yeah, right.
I'd like to have a look. And there you get to transfer your stuff over as you're shooting, which is kind of good. So it sort of maybe adds a bit of extra life to some of these older cameras that don't have those capabilities. Which is good.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of cool. Yeah. There's another one that's just been announced. Wi-Fi, it's called. Weyefuye.
Oh God.
Wi-Fi. basically the same sort of principle. Yeah. So I'm sure we'll see a bunch of those come out. Therefore, the prices will drop on them.
Right.
So that was kind of good.
That's good.
I got me a new software sponsor.
Oh, really?
Which is nice. Well, since Google took over Nick, that sort of they sort of nicked off.
Oh, okay.
Sponsors. I'm pretty excited. So the new software, the DxO software, if you've seen the DxO.
Oh, wow.
Apps.
Nice.
Yeah, which is it's not just another piece of software, which is kind of what I like about it.
Yeah,
being that for those who don't know, in the wide world of sports, the DxO are the only company in the world that basically get every camera and every lens that's ever been made, rip them all apart, literally tear them apart, find all the flaws and map all the flaws in them.
Yep,
and then put them back together effectively and compare. Let's say if you have camera A with lens B on it, the software recognizes that, okay, this camera has these flaws and this lens has these flaws, but when these two pieces of kit are together, they have this combined type of flaw.
Right.
And the raw files will automatically correct for it as you bring into the software.
So it's kind of like lens profiling as well as camera profiling.
Exactly. Yeah. And then sort of matching, but then if you take that lens off and put it onto your other body, well, it has a different range of issues and it calibrates for that. And it's pretty darn smart stuff, I've got to say.
So do you have to tell it any of that stuff, or it just pulls it all from the EXIF data?
All from EXIF.
Nice. Yep.
Which, of course, that otherwise no one would ever do it because lazy is all get out.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's pretty darn cool, I've got to say.
Yeah.
But also, one of the lenses, a friend of mine's lending me his 15mm Sigma ultra-wide fisheye. Ultra-wide, can't say ultra-wide fisheye, Glenn. It's an oxymoron. So it's a fisheye. Ultra wide fisheye. Just on those stupid statements. I was watching a presenter the other day, and he came up with his final conclusion. Was his second last line. I loved it. So can you show me your penultimate final conclusion and all your other final? So I'm taking this this fisheye to India with me, knowing I'm going to get all this fairly extreme curvature.
Yeah.
But this software, one click, it fixes it.
Nice.
It straightens it because it knows the lens, it knows its curve factor,
yep,
and everything else based on the body you've got it on. It fixes it with one click.
Nice.
Which is pretty impressive, and its perspective control is astounding. Yeah,
cool.
It was doing a shot. They were doing a demonstration of a painting on a wall,
right?
But to make sure he didn't have any flash flare on the painting, he basically lit the wall. He sort of aimed at the wall was like a 45-degree angle.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what the angle of the painting's on.
Yeah.
45-degree. So he's actually lit the wall to the left of the painting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where the hot spot of the flash is on the wall. And then in software, it straightens the painting back out so it's perfectly straight.
Right.
With no flash flare. It was pretty cool.
But the exposure would have been a little bit hotter on the left side of the image.
No, because it was enough off that it balances exposure well enough with the flash.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. And it was beautiful. It was oh shit. That's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those shots when you're out on a Saturday night and you've had a little few too many and everything's just a bit wonky, you can fix it.
Yeah. It'd be good for architectural and real estate photography too. Yeah.
They also have this other tool for basically you can just map lines. You find where your parallel or your horizontal lines are in an image, just draw a few of them across, hit a button, it does it all for you. It's astounding.
Sweet.
So I'm looking forward to trying that. I'm probably not going to arrive for the next week or so, the software.
Yeah.
So I haven't actually got to use it yet, but I'll be having to apply pretty extensively when it does. I'm trying to get it in before I go off to the US.
Yeah.
And I was shopping around for a new backpack whilst I was there too for the trip to India, because I wanted to try and get it down to the smallest amount of stuff possible.
Yep.
Yeah, as you can imagine.
And did you find something?
Well, I did. I did, funnily enough. Yeah. And fortunately, it was with one of my sponsors. I didn't have to pay for it, which was very handy. What was it? It was the Lowepro Flipside Sport.
Okay.
So it's a backpack. This is what I love about it. It's a backpack. There you go. So you carries two bodies, half a dozen lenses, a couple of flash guns, all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And room for other bits and bobs and stuff that you'd carry around on a day-to-day. And also a hydration bladder, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, nice.
But so it's a backpack with a waist belt that goes around. But the actual camera gear is you can only access it from the back. You can't access it from the front of the backpack. So in other words, if someone's walking behind you and trying to get into your backpack to get to your gear, they couldn't get to it because the only opening is actually on your spine.
Yes.
Okay.
That's like the F-stop bags. They're designed that way. Yeah.
Okay. But and then this thing basically you pull your arms out of the backpack.
Yeah.
And your waist belt's still attached. You just spin it around to your front.
Right.
Open up the flap, change lenses, cameras, whatever. Pull it back around, put it back on your back, and away you keep going.
Nice.
So you don't ever have to put your bag down.
Yeah. Nice.
Which is good because that's the time if someone's following you, they're going to do a bit of a runner and try and time it to. The minute you put the bag down, it just disappears.
Yeah.
So that's pretty clever. I was pretty happy with that.
Excellent.
And Koken, who's also imported by Maxwell's, the same people who bring Lowepro, have just brought in a new range of Harmony filters, which I'm going to get access to a whole bunch of because they're apparently the thinnest filters going around.
Okay.
3 mil or something, these filters.
Okay.
Yeah, so small you can hardly – so for me who never uses filters
– Yeah.
very handy, but I'm going to start because you should see how badly scratched my lenses are. No, but what I got them for was that they're ND variable filters,
right?
And polarizers. Yeah, you want to get
in a
land of bright sun and bad pollution. A polarizer is going to be a thing to help give a bit of extra kick,
definitely,
from time to time.
Definitely.
So yeah, that was good. And I got a new tripod to go with it too for the trip.
Okay.
Oh, I had a good shopping list. Fantastic. But this little Velbon one that folds down to 30 centimeters, which is pretty darn small.
Yeah.
But expands up to 153 centimeters.
Wow.
And still takes 4 odd kilos of gear.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's this whole new leggy system, which is pretty cool. So, I'm trying to think, I don't like carrying tripods. No one does, I guess. Mm. I don't like carrying tripods, but I want to have one.
Yeah,
because it's doing this night lighting festival at night, you kind of want to have lots of stability.
Yep.
but I don't want the size. So 30-odd, I think it's like 32 centimetres collapsed, which is sweet as, and it clicks into the bag. The flip side sport. It's got a little pouch that it goes into, which is awesome. So it makes it a very convenient little all-round package.
Yeah, right.
So I had some fun with my shopping.
You did well.
Oh, yeah. Having fun. I got some new stuff from Hoodman, which is good, and I'm catching up with them, and I'm in LA in a couple of weeks. And
right.
They're giving me a whole bunch of extra memory cards to take to India too, which is really good. So, lovely. Yeah, so I had a good time shopping. The shopping was good. Yeah.
Excellent.
Always like that, yeah, especially when the wallet doesn't have to come out of your pocket. It's always the best kind of shopping.
Yeah, exactly.
Did a couple of some great fun shoots on the KL stand, which brings in the Last Light and Elochrom. Sounds like an advert, this podcast. Brought to you by
Whenever we have a trade show, it is a little bit like that.
It tends to be gear, I guess, and because this is the gear I use, so I guess to talk about it. But I was doing shoots per day on the KL stand promoting Lasterlight products.
Yep.
And I was usually using one of their soft boxes and a reflector. But I was doing this kind of cool lighting demonstration for people where I'd move the light in an arc around the model and shoot it. And so basically start off at a 45-45 angle, then go to a 90, then go to 180, so firing directly back at me.
Yep.
And just showing people the differences in how direction and angle of light changes shots dramatically.
Yep.
And so that was pretty cool. I was pretty happy with the shots we were getting out of that, even though we had some diabolical technical issues of the tethering, the dreaded case of tethering and cables getting stood on all the time.
Ooh.
And we had two cables go faulty during it. So you're waiting for images to come up. So I started pulling out really bad jokes, as you do. And I've got to say, because I tell the joke, because the groans that came from the audience was fantastic. So I'd heard this joke in the morning. It was perfect time to bring it out. What kind of cheese do you need to hide a horse?
I don't know.
Mascarpone.
Nice.
So bad, isn't it?
Great.
That's the best reaction I had all week.
That's a dad joke if ever there was one.
That's what someone in the audience said. Yeah, that's a dad joke. All right. Fantastic. So I've got some great shoots. Then I did a couple of talks. I did a talk on street photography versus street portraiture.
Oh, okay.
A talk on that. So because I'm not a big fan. I'll do it, but I'm not a big fan of street photography.
Right.
But I'm a big fan of street portraits.
Right.
Yep. And the difference being, of course, is you actually go up and actually interact with the people before you shoot them as opposed to sitting back being a voyeur with a big lens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird. I just thought I had this quote from David Duchemin about are they acts of representation or acts of interpretation?
Yeah. You mentioned
that was on the presentation.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was, I don't ever remember saying it during the talk. Just hit me just then. That's weird. That's very strange. There's about 400 or so people at each talk, which was rather nice. So
it was probably one of those moments where you just zoned out, you're on autopilot, and it just came out without you realizing.
Absolutely. And then, of course, I did the flash talk the next day.
Right.
Which, you helped assist with, of course, with my little bit of sound stuff going on.
Yes.
With the Queen's flash. Ah! Yep. Save for the universe. That went down a treat.
Cool.
And I had this little animated flash guy flying in off the screen.
Oh, okay.
And of course, I decided that I'd emulate his same pose and shape on stage.
Oh, okay.
Look like a total idiot. But, do these things. And then I had my flash t-shirt underneath my shirt. So halfway through the presentation, when I said, and people say to you, well, how do you do that? Well, that's when I pulled out the Flash Gordon t-shirt. We called it the Richard Annable technique. You used to have the Superman t-shirt.
Yep.
So as I'm a firm believer in the Case School of Photography and Marketing. That's copy and steal everything.
Yep.
here a crazy idea. You'll steal it.
Yep.
And so that was there's some fun talks there. We had a lot of chats and a lot of stuff, a lot of questions coming out of that, which was really good. So I had a ball. I had a great time as far as personally. I was just a bit sad for the industry.
Yeah. Did you get to any of the judging?
Not at all. That stuff has no interest in me whatsoever.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I accidentally walked past it once, if that counts. And I looked inside and there was one guy. All I could hear him saying was, here comes the 413 from Frankston. I think it's a gauge 57 engine with the 279 block. I don't know, some of the train spotting terminology. I don't know. Right. He was one of the main judges.
Right.
You know, I just don't get it. Yeah, but there's some lovely Photoshop work, I'd have to say. There was some of the best Photoshopping you've seen in the photos I walked up. Yeah. You know, it's just my jealousy that I don't have those kind of skills in the first place.
Yeah.
Even remotely, unfortunately, but there's some wonderful ideas, some great creative photography going on, and you'll love that.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, based around, I guess it's shooting with a post process in mind. You kind of hope it's that rather than I've got these disparate images, and maybe if I slap it all together and come up with something funky, it might be okay.
Yeah, right.
But you know, a lot of people get a lot of stuff out of that judging, so all power to them. I'm just not ever felt inclined to put my photos into competitions. I've never thought of photography as a competitive sport.
Yeah.
And I'm a mad fly fisherman, you know. And
you have mentioned that, yep.
Yeah, and, you know, I like to go out to, you know, quiet little streams in the middle of nowhere by myself in the quietude and the solitude and just really, you know, soak up life. And then they turned it into a competitive sport.
Yeah.
There's the World Fly Fishing Championships and there's Top Hooker on TV and there's all these Kingfisher and all. Really? You want to turn something that's a passion and a hobby and a pastime and something that gives you joy and turn it into competition? Okay. Mm-hmm. But I suppose photography judging is not in that kind of thing. It's not really competition against others. It's just trying to improve their own skills. So.
Yeah.
Whereas if you enter in a portrait prize, as an example, and you're competing against other people's images, art is subjective. I just don't know how anyone could ever judge impartially.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's what always gets me. I don't know. How could you? I know I couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've judged quite not that I want to, but when I talk at camera clubs, they often want me to judge their the month's competition or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll always give it a proviso. Look, I'm happy to give my opinion, but it's only that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a subjective medium. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I just hate to think there's people have been crushed around the world, of their desires and passions and hobby because of stuff like that. You know, they get rated poorly in a competition or something or, you know, and, yeah, maybe if it's somebody else judging, they may have got a not necessarily dramatically different, but enough that it maybe gave them hope and kept them going, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe people can write in and tell us the why. If they do that, what is it about them that, you know, that means something to them, you
why,
know?
Why have you entered images into a photographic competition and what did it mean to you when you heard the judges' comments, either positive or negative?
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There's a challenge for the week.
Yeah.
So it's going to write back into us. Yeah. Been a bit of a quiet week on the old podcast. Some bloke called Davidson sent a few things into us, I noticed.
He did.
Canon launched or showed some video footage of a new sensor, a new video sensor that they've got.
Oh, yes, I saw that. That was pretty amazing.
Well, maybe.
No?
Well, you know, they're shooting fireflies, right?
Yeah.
About 15 years ago, I went out shooting fireflies. Yeah, no problem at all.
Still or video?
Still.
Right, well, this was video.
I mean, the photos were crap, but I went out and had fun doing it, you know?
Well, as long as you had fun, that's the main thing.
That's the most important.
But the point is that this was video that was shot, you know, in extraordinarily dimly lit environments. And you know, it wasn't a mess of color noise. It was pretty respectable, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I said, who knows in a year's time, we're going to, well, not years, 5 years time, we're going to be shooting at a million ISO with no noise. It's going to totally revolutionize how we shoot. But see, the thing that I picked up out of this, the information about the camera that they're using to do it is that each pixel is 7.5 times larger than those on the Canon 1DX, you know, their top-of-the-range camera.
Right.
So, I mean, they're finally maybe starting to get their heads around, well, we don't need 400 million pixel cameras.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just need a camera with some decent-sized pixels. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's an idea, Bruce. Let's make them megapixels.
That's a great idea.
Let's make those suckers big. Yeah, how many pixels? So I've got a 3-pixel camera. There's only 3, but they're bloody big.
So is it actually that the each individual photo site or photo well on the sensor is larger, or is it just that they are further apart and therefore there's less heat transference between them?
Each pixel is 7.5 times larger. Each pixel is 7.5 times larger.
Yeah,
right. Did I mention that? That each pixel. Not the bleeding well, yeah. Not the space between the pixels.
But what we call a pixel is a well, isn't it? It's like a container that the photons of light are captured in.
It's a picture element. That's what pixel stands for.
Yeah, I know that. Forget it.
See, you're starting to talk techno babble to me again. You're not going to fry out if you do that.
Ooh, okay. Look, a squirrel.
Ooh, 7.5 times larger than the 1DX. So I guess it doesn't really matter either way. It's bigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's bigger. So that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get back to the days of the 10 megapixel camera.
Yeah.
But you know, all the pixels are 4 times bigger than what they are now, and that light performance is going to be pretty darn cool.
You know, it'll get to the point where you won't need to carry a torch because you'll just hold your camera in front of you in video mode, and it'll magnify the light so much you'll be able to see where you're going in pitch black.
I never have to worry. I just drop my drawers. Yeah, the sun shines out of my what? So enough people think anyway. Actually, either I'll just show my lily white legs. That tends to light up enough stuff as well.
Yeah, right.
Now, did you see that the message through from Michael Morley to you?
Oh, I did. I did. I
didn't say I read that with a slight bit of enjoyment. I must say,
I didn't know how to respond to that on the wall because I just didn't want to offend him.
So for those who haven't seen their Facebook walls post, Michael Morley, the lovely, very lovely Michael, not lovely physically, but lovely personality and all. Michael Morley says, I understand you both aren't big HDR fans, but I don't mind it. But have you seen some of Trey Ratcliffe's images? I found one of the best when it comes to HDR. Well, I guess you can tell by Bruce's derision and his laughter what he thinks of that. I guess the way you could phrase it, best of a bad bunch. Yeah,
it's subjective.
There you go. You've got to be polite. It's subjective, but I've got to say, I do like some of Trey's stuff. I just think, as obviously Bruce possibly does as well, some of them are just a bit overkill.
Yeah.
But some of his stuff is very good.
In his defense, the stuff that he has done of late is far less OTT than some of his earlier work. And I guess that stands to reason. If if you keep at any art form, you are going to get better at it.
You hope.
You'd hope that you will improve with it. No matter what it is, whether it's writing songs or taking photos, you will get better the more you do something. So, yeah.
You hope.
I'll cut him some slack.
So, whilst I think of it, the DxO software we were talking about before, that has this adjustment panel for the RAWs, which pulls detail out files like you would not believe, as far as the amount of detail and highlights and shadows. It's possibly does away with the need for HDR.
Are you suggesting that as a RAW converter, it does a better job than Adobe Camera Raw?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Wow.
And I think that several stops more.
What?
Pulling power.
Really?
Yeah. And it's astounding what it can do. And here's the thing, it does it all in one file. So it's amazing what it can do, how it can play out shadows and highlights and just – it was quite, the demonstrations were quite incredible. And I said, the need to pull out detail that, you need, or the type of shots you need to do a HDR to get the detail out of, maybe, yeah, this is the future in how the actual single images can be processed. And yeah,
wow,
maybe not have quite that over the top look.
Wow. That kind of baffles my mind as to how software, like how one piece of software can achieve so radically a different result from the same raw source file compared with another piece of software. Like, you would think that the raw file is a finite quantity of data. So it just sort of blows my mind that, you know, one piece of software can do a significantly better job with it than another piece of software.
I guess the only thing I could maybe put it down to is this ability of them to pull apart cameras and find out all the ways of getting the most out of the sensor technology, getting the most out of what the cameras are doing and finding any flaws and maybe adjusting that. And possibly that's how they're getting more data.
But the thing is, the DxO software doesn't have access to the camera. All it's got access to is the raw image that came from the camera, or the raw data that came from the camera.
Yeah, but if let's say Adobe software is pulling, it's not analyzing any potential faults that may be in the way the data's recorded.
Right.
A la the way, you know, aberration in the lens or whatever is a fault.
Yep.
This software is smart enough to know, well, you know, if I do this, I can pull out more detail, I can fix that problem, or I can adjust this. Maybe it's doing that with, I don't know, with the raw file as well. But yeah, the proof will be in the pudding. I want to go take some of my typical crappy landscape shots and try and fix them with this stuff when I get it. Yeah, because I'm not a particularly good landscape shooter. I'm okay, but yeah, I'm going to deliberately do some shots that you normally think, oh, maybe HDR might come in handy here,
yep,
and just see what we can pull out of it. So it's going to be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like when you see these demonstrations, they're always done with the right image, you know, the image that pulls out the best possible results, but was that a real-life example or not, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, I'd be keen to see some A-B comparisons once you've got DxO installed and running. Of, you know, the same RAW file processed, yeah, with both DxO and Camera Raw, and to see the difference in output.
It'd be interesting, won't it?
Definitely.
So, playful times ahead. I think the flight from Melbourne to New York, I think door-to-door is 36 hours. So I have plenty of time to play.
Excellent.
Yeah, if I'm not sleeping. The last thing I've got on my list this week,
yeah,
is the changes to Facebook's terms of service. Have you ever seen the internet buzz that's been flying around about this?
Yeah, I saw that, but I, you know what? I saw the headline and I didn't even go and read it because I see this headline pop up every 3 months and I'm just over it. Like, and you don't even know whether the thing that's popping up this week is actually something new or whether it's the same crap that everyone was jumping up and down about 3 months ago and it's just latecomers getting on the information.
Well, this is a September 3rd update.
Okay, so what's new?
I'm no expert, and I'd like us to get an expert on.
Okay.
Talk about these things. And I think you know the man I'm thinking of. William Long.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I think we should get William Long on to talk about some of these, not only the realities, but maybe some of the hysteria.
Yeah,
as well.
For sure.
Some of this, yeah. Just so you can maybe make better judgments. But from what's been said at the moment and it's flying around is basically that, A, Facebook can take and use your images to do whatever they want with them.
Right.
They can sell them to a party for commercial use.
What?
Then if the images, if someone complains, so let's say I've taken a photo of somebody and Facebook has sold it to someone who's then associated a product with it, and that person sees the advert and complains there was no model release for me for to say I was going to be okay to be using that advert, well, Facebook's not the one to blame. I am as the photographer.
Whoa.
Even though they took my image unknowingly, sold on my image unknowingly, got used for something else, I'm the one to blame.
Jeez.
So, you know, I'm not... life is like a box of chocolates, and I'm not a very smart man. So we should maybe have a chat with William, see if he's prepared to come on and and have a wee chat with us about it.
Yeah,
and he's right into all this sort of stuff, and
Yep.
And I'm sure he'll be able to give us a, yeah, I said, once again, it's not just about what's the reality, but what is actually the hysteria and what's the truth behind this and what's the reality and the realistic chance of some of this stuff actually happening.
Yeah. All right, well, I will reach out to him through the week and see if we can get him on next week.
Yeah. He just won, I think it was Commercial Photographer of the Year award at the APPI Awards as well in PMA. So
wow.
I have to give him congratulations as well.
Wow. Well done, William. That's great.
Yeah, so he's done very well for himself. And if my internet wasn't going slower than a slow thing that's going really slow, I would have pulled it up and got the exact details.
That's all right. I'll find it. All right, mate. So what do you got on for the next 7 days?
Babysitting. Daddy daycare, as I like to call it. I got chastised for calling it daddy daycare by Richard Clark's wife, funnily enough.
Oh,
Richard
okay. Clark,
I've been chastised for calling it daddy care, daycare. She says, no, it's called parenting. Miss Therese, you're spot on, you know. You're absolutely spot on. But I like the concept of daddy. It just sounds nice, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's called parenting. So I'm parenting for a few days, and then I've got a couple of understand your camera workshop at the end of the week.
Yep.
And I've got I think a studio workshop next week, and which will of course be the one that'll be when people listen to this.
Yep.
And then I'm off to America, so I've only got a couple of workshops left for.
So we'll get one more podcast in before you go.
I think we're two because I'm. It's more about it's because of the delay of when this comes out.
Right.
Yeah. I'll leave October too, so we should fit two more in.
Oh, cool. Excellent.
And I don't even have a clue what the time difference is like at the moment, but if it's possible to do at least a little something from the US, I'd like to.
Yeah, for sure. And you might actually have decent bandwidth over there too.
Well, you never know. I might even find someone interesting for people to listen to talk to. I might bring somebody else along. Of course, it would mean taking my microphone with me, wouldn't it?
It would.
A pain. Yeah. But you know, where there's a will.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's. I'll be meeting up with a whole bunch of interesting folk over there. So who knows? And we haven't heard any responses from our chat with Eric Curry on our Facebook page.
It's been
deathly quiet.
Yeah.
So I hope people are finding these odd folk that we find to pull along interesting and worthy.
Yeah.
I must say, I've got to say g'day to David. As well, which is what I think about it.
Yeah.
David came up to me at the show and said, I'm probably the 51st person to say this to you, but I'm your 7th listener.
Nice.
This is great. So I had quite a few people come up to me at the show and mention the podcast and
excellent.
And give us some tips on how to improve them. And but I said, no, I'm staying on the podcast anyway.
Lovely. Excellent, excellent. And, of course, it's shuttersincpodcast.com, not shuttersinc.com. Adam Davidson said to me, you know, you should try and register that because Glyn's telling everyone it's shuttersinc.com. And I said, mate, if that URL had been available, I would have registered it.
Yeah, only on stage in front of hundreds of people. And so when people come in and say, why is it going to a window shutter company? I said, yeah. It's a podcast on window shutters. Look it up. Yeah, so I fixed that by day two. It did go to prove that I've never been to the site, though, to listen to the podcast.
It does.
I didn't know what it was called.
Despite the fact that I mention it in the introduction every week.
Do you really?
Well, I generally say, hi, and welcome to episode 237 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuttersincpodcast.com, and joining me on the line...
Do you really?
So you don't even tune in when we're recording until 20 seconds in, could you?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? So I'll listen to that next week and see if you actually do something.
Well, mate,
one day I'll take this seriously.
Yeah, I doubt it.
A few other people did come up to me at the show and say they'd listened to the podcast and said they got some really good useful information out of it. I said, "What? Bruce has been getting some stuff in, has he?" I thought I was going to have to apologise again for accidental useful information. So, yeah, so it was nice. It was lovely. Lovely for people to come up to us, though. It was quite nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. You have a great week.
You have a week too.
I, I shall do my best.
Oh, I've got to ask you, I've got to ask one last quick thing before you go.
Yeah.
Have you been taking any photos this week?
Oh,
the project we talked about last week.
I thought I was off the hook.
Thought you'd get off. Just stuck it in there at the end.
Thought I was off the hook. You know what? I haven't.
So I'm taking that as a no, will I? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've only got two words to say to you, Bruce.
Yeah.
Pathetic.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Pretty much.
I've got one other thing I came out of the show with.
What are you, Steve Jobs? One more thing.
What's one more thing? Because, for a long time I've been saying, of course, photography is to write with light, but it's more important to shape with shadows.
Right, yeah.
Have I been saying that?
No.
I've been saying that everywhere else. Well, I'm a shadow chaser these days, more so than a light chaser.
Right.
Because I expect to get the light right.
Yep.
Yeah, when I was shooting on the weekend, I'm saying, I expect the light to be right because I set it up right. Yep. I expect it to be right.
Yep.
That isn't what makes the shot. What makes the shot is how I use the shadows.
Fair enough.
So I've been saying that photography should be a two-word thing, not photography. It should be photography, so to write with light and shape with shadows.
Yeah, right.
And the shape with shadows to me is more important. Not more important, but it's the thing that makes the photo for me.
Yep.
Is what I do with the shadows more so than because I expect the light to be good. That's a given for me.
Yep.
It's what I do with the shadows which makes or breaks the shot. So it's photos skios.
Right.
To shape with shadows or write with shadows.
Yeah.
So I'm changing. Yeah. That's going to be my big thing going forward. Is really starting to get people to really focus on the shadows. Focus on the eyes, but look at the shadows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Not getting too confused with...
No, it comes back to my favourite quote from Joe McNally, where he talked about this editor at Life magazine who said to him, if you want to keep something interesting, don't light all of it. It's about, let there be some contrast and some shadows.
But it's not just a matter of just not light, but it's where you put the contrast and what those shadows are doing and saying and telling. That's everything. If we spend more time looking at shadows, then especially on a face, then we may find we've got more interest and more drama and more depth in our photographs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah,
nice.
That was it. Well, so what I got, I didn't get out of the show. I got out of the show the word because I met a friend of mine who's Greek. What's the Greek word for shadows?
And it's skios.
So I got skios.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly how he said it. Was it skios or skios? So if anyone out there can actually give me the exact pronunciation or even how it's written down, that'd be awesome.
Cool.
Because that's going to go into every presentation from now on.
Nice.
So that was it. That's my last bit of verbal diarrhea for the show.
Excellent.
I'm going to stop right now. I'm not going to go on anymore. I'm stopping right now, Bruce, because I could go on and on all night.
Glad to hear it.
Careful. I'm stopping because that's it. I'm the sort of person that if someone says to me, Glenn, just shut up, I'm just going to shut straight up. I'm not going to keep on going on like some people do, Bruce. It's going to be stopped right this very
second.
Really
good to
hear.
No
waffling on and on and on. See, and people know that. When they know that someone's going to shut up, they feel that way. Oh, so good to hear. Fine, he's going to shut up. If he just shuts up for once, it'd be fantastic, I'm not one of those people who wants to go on and on and really get people on people's nerves because they don't shut up. Just keep talking with like Torre Molinos, on and on and on.
No, I'm just going to fade that out. All right. Well, you have a good week, and I will. I'll catch up with you next week.
And hopefully the internet's better.
Yeah. All right, mate. Have a good week. Talk to you next week.
Take care. Yeah, bye.
Shutters Inc., another audio2u.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.